You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was produced thanks to our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello, you're listening to the Mythgreens Podcast. My name is Wes, and with me are...
Chris.
And...
Oren.
And today we're talking about dealing with failure in role-playing games by learning how to roll with it.
I'm pretty sure that the great Gygax has already given us the way to deal with failure, which is that the nothing happens and the game pauses and everyone stares at you awkwardly. Yeah. Is that not the solution?
And then berate you for having poor dice rolling skills.
Yeah, you're just bad at this game.
Why can't you roll better? I'll never forget.
Everybody knows if your character, if you roll badly, it's a personal failing.
That's right. I'll never forget the first
job.
The first time I got shamed with my first failure, and I've been practicing ever since.
Oh no! That does not sound good.
No.
I mean, so like we joke about this, but I actually think that this is at least part of the reason why some players that I have played with, fortunately none that I play with now, were like flagrant cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all fudged a die or two. I'll admit I'm not 100% honest on my dice. I've certainly never cheated in Chris's game, of course.
Now I know to watch Oren's rolls and double check and actually count the number of successes he gets.
Yeah, but in any game except for the GM who is currently present, I have occasionally fudged a role. No one is 100% honest, but I have played with players who were flagrant cheaters to the point where it was just like, it was so obvious that I barely even bothered to ask them for their roles anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that part of the reason why they did that was because they had this idea that if they fail a role, that means they are a bad player.
I think you're right on some level. Yeah, like I've played games, you know, where like, you know, somebody keeps rolling and they keep rolling poorly, and then, you know, it's depressing. It's like I can't do anything, right? And that's no fun. So it would make sense that somebody would want to fudge the rolls after that, or try to, I don't know. People want to be doing cool stuff in their games, and failure can sometimes be an impediment to that. If you go about it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever known anybody who's like punished their dice?
Punished their dice by what? Yeah, putting like, it in the corner?
Yeah. Basically, you're bad dice. Go over here now.
I've known people who have like lucky dice, but never like punished ones that perform. That's so funny.
Well, I mean, that's like that's a thing on the internet, is the dice shaming memes where they like put the picture of their die with like a one up and then like describing what the failure caused to happen to them. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's what's funny is that most of those, depending on what kind of game you're in, a lot of those failures actually sound really fun. Like not all the time. But D&D, part of the way that I can enjoy D&D is by embracing how absurd it is, because the rules are just ridiculous, and if you actually follow them, the kind of story that it creates is nonsense. But, you know, I can enjoy the weird nonsense that it creates, where it's like, yeah, I won that fight because I realized I had an extra headbutt attack, and then I headbutted them a couple of times, and got a crit, and killed them with a headbutt, and it's like, okay, sure. So, you know, I can also have fun with I crit failed, so I tried to attack the boss, and I just dropped my weapon. I just, like, forgot how to hold on to it. It's gone. It's mm-hmm. on the floor now.
I think 5th edition took away crit fail.
I think crit fail hasn't actually been in D&D for quite some time.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it persists, right? This idea that if you can roll the lowest roll possible, you somehow crit fail.
Right. outside of an absurdist game, my first piece of advice is to always describe your players as, or always describe the characters as cool. Like, if they fail a roll, it shouldn't be because they suddenly forgot how to do the thing they're good at, right? Like, this is a thing that some new GMs have trouble with, is that, like, you know, players will be more accepting of failure if you make it sound like they're still cool. Because this is, like, you know, even horror games are still, to a large degree, a scenario of empowerment. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to hear about how my expert, you know, jiu-jitsu master, like, failed to attack because he, like, stubbed his toe as he in the run-up, right? I don't want that.
And it can even be applied to a certain extent when your character is not supposed to be an expert. I had, in a recent game, I had one player that was trying to roll to resist a master vampire. And failed. And, I mean, that was kind of better for the story, and it actually made sense, because this was a budding vampire against, like, their, you know, sire vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I was surprised by how hard she tried to resist, that she used meta currency to boost her roll and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she got a miserable roll, she turned to me and she was like, but I put up a fight, right? Like, she really wanted. So, I mean, I made it, you know, she still failed against the master vampire, but I made an effort to be like, so yeah, the, you know, you struggle, and the vampire, like, it looks surprised and worried, you know, and mm-hmm. then has to, like, redouble her efforts in order to get a hang, you know, get a control of you, and, you know, and tried to make it seem like there was a real struggle, even though it was a miserable role.
Yeah. No, that I mean, I was there, and I thought that was very well done, and it added quite a lot of flavor to the scene. It was pretty cool. I mean,
with how often we talk about this game that Chris is running, we should probably just invite the podcast audience to come watch. I think that would, like, clear a lot of things up for them.
If you try to, like, stealth videotape this next game, there would be words.
Yeah. Chris, that's a good point, though. And, I mean, something that I've tried to do if you're, when, like, running games for myself, is if there's combat where, you know, like, there's this idea that, like, if I attack and I roll poorly, that I miss. And that really paints, like, a picture of incompetence, right? But, like, mm-hmm. if you're attacking something and you miss, I think that it's the GM's job to try to still make it seem like action is happening, right? It's like the armor of this monster is too tough. Like, you bang against it repeatedly, but nothing seems to, like, pierce it. Or, you know, this person out parries you or something like that. It just, don't let it end at miss. I think that is just a really way to let the game fall flat.
Yeah, I really think that the dice, it feels like in most games, maybe not in all games, most games, I think the dice are there to represent luck.
Yeah.
And chance. And so if you, the character, particularly if a character is an expert at something, like, there was bad luck. And mm-hmm. I know, you know, I've listened to Orin do this a lot as a GM, you know, where it's just like, you know, this time around you try to do something, but because, you know, the rain made things extra slippery, and then there somebody else walked in and, you know, create a hassle, this was just basically became an impossible task because you had bad luck. And so then you did your best, but then this and this consequence happened. And if you make it like, oh, wow, I just had bad luck, then it doesn't feel like your character just suddenly became bad at whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we're talking a lot about description, and that's important. But I also think that mechanics are important in how to handle failure. So this is actually a solved problem, believe it or not. Like, our RPG designers have figured this out. It just hasn't spread to all systems. But before I tell you what the best way is, I want to go through a couple of wrong ways that I have seen, which are kind of amusing. Okay, so I've seen this in two systems. This first one is reroll at a penalty. I've seen this in Legend of the Five Rings, 4th edition, and in Eclipse Phase, where when you fail a roll, the system just lets you make the roll again, but at a harder difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just reading it, and I'm like, what is the point of this exactly? Like, what does this mechanic actually accomplish? It's like, for one thing, it's really unclear in both games whether or not this reroll is supposed to represent you, like, trying again, like, in character. Like, did you try to climb the tree and fail, and now you fell, and you're trying to climb it again, but it's harder because the tree is angry at you? It's really hard to tell. That the rules are not, do not make that clear. Or if it's just supposed to be a, like, you know, it's all behind the scenes in the mechanics of the rules, and your character is only actually trying once. And that's, like, sort of the strict interpretation, because in general, you know, because you don't add things that the game doesn't tell you to add. So in general, what that means is that this mechanic is basically just boosting your chances of success.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you just roll again, regardless if your chances are lower and you succeed, well, it's like the failure never existed. You know, it's not, you might as well just give them, like, +2 to their roll or something. Like, it has the pretty much the same effect. I think, yeah, and this is, again, something that I'm trying to get a handle of in my game, is that, you know, you have to move things forward in mm-hmm. some way after somebody fails. And because if you don't, then it is hard to justify what they can't roll again. And right. I recently, again, in my last session, you know, I had one, I fixed it, but I briefly messed it up, where I had one player, she rolled a stealth roll, and she failed her stealth roll, and I kind of meant that that means that she would, you know, get the attention of the people that she was trying to sneak around, but then the way I described it, that didn't end up happening, and so they still didn't know she was there, and so she had the opportunity to take another action, but then I, you know, didn't want to just let her roll again for stealth, because she'd already made that roll, and then she kind of halted, and she wasn't sure what to do, because she had an action, but she wasn't allowed to take an action that would actually achieve her goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it just became a weird situation. I, you know, I ended up fixing it by, you know, I kind of figured out that that her goal wasn't to not get caught. Her goal was to be able to overhear the people without them knowing she was there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then once I knew that, it was easy to be like, okay, I will actually let you do this. You will overhear what they're saying, but the consequence is that you're going to get caught afterwards. And that worked out much well, and then moved things forward. But, like, yeah, something has to happen to change the circumstance after they fail, so that they can't just, you know, sit around and then try again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's, like, Chris is hitting on what the right way to handle failures mm-hmm. is. She's kind of describing it around the edges here. But there's one more wrong way that I want to describe before we get to the right way, which is pushing the roll as seen in Call of Cthulhu 7th edition. And admittedly, this is actually a popular feature with players. And what it does is, when you fail a roll, you can push it. I don't know why they decided to call it that, but that's what they call it. And then you get to roll again. But if you fail, this time it's a critical failure, and, like, something really bad happens, right? And players love that rule, because it makes them less likely to fail. And Call of Cthulhu is one of those games where, by default, if you fail, nothing happens, right? There's, like, you know, you have to really work to, as a GM, to try to make failure interesting. So players take it for that reason, because failure is boring. No one wants to fail in Call of Cthulhu. At least a lot of rolls. Some rolls have their consequences built in, but a lot of the times you fail and, like, well, now what?
Mm-hmm.
And a critical, honestly, a critical failure in a lot of ways is preferable to a normal failure, because at least something is happening now, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's still, even though players like it, it's still a bad thing, because it's trying to paper over the actual problem, which is that failure in Call of Cthulhu is bad, it just halts the game, it's not fun, and this mechanic also really benefits double benefits the players who have hyper-specialized, because for them, like, re-rolling is only something you do when you have, like, a fluke, and it's like, I failed the thing I have 90% in, well, I'll push it, re-roll, it probably not failed this mm-hmm. time. Whereas it's, like, not very useful for someone who has, like, 30% in something. It's like, well, I'm probably just gonna fail again if I push it, yeah, right?
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, that's the second bad one. Are y'all ready to hear what the right way is?
Tell us.
Okay, so you already know. I'm just, I'm just doing the podcast. It's so the right way is what many people refer to as fail forward, which is what Chris has been describing, where a failure isn't just like, well, you stopped. It's like, oh, something else happened. Like, you heard them, but now they've seen you, right? But more specifically, it is the fail forward system as represented in Torchbearer and Mouseguard. Because that system, what it has is it has two options. When you fail a roll, the GM can put a twist on it, which is what Chris is describing, where either you get what you want, but a weird thing happens, or in some cases you don't get what you want, but something else happens to move the story forward,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the player just gets their original stakes and they receive a condition, like injured or frayed, sick, whatever it is, right? And the reason that second option is so valuable is that sometimes as a GM, you can't think of anything that's a good twist, right? It's like you realize you called for a roll, and then you're like, I actually didn't have an interesting consequence of failure. Well, now you have one. It's there. It's called a condition. Now you can give it to him.
Yeah, that's great.
And the game just keeps moving, and I am of the strict opinion that this is the correct way to handle failures, and that all games should do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not going to, because nobody listens to me, but they should. This is objectively a better way to handle failure than I have seen in any other game.
Yeah, I think there's a couple issues with the D&D and the legacy and the mindset that it's given a lot of people in role-playing. And because D&D is so combat-focused, I think it's really easy for, you know, me having started role-playing in D&D and just some other people perhaps that are exposed to it, just get in the mindset that if somebody takes a risk and they fail, then they should just get an injury. And that's all that happens. Right? Which, if you're in a combat simulator, that sort of makes sense, you know, right? Because you're in a combat, you lose a hit point. The antagonist then goes next and you're back and forth. But that does not, you know, unless you're simulating combat, that does not work for a story. The injury is for them to succeed their goal anyway, usually, and then get an injury as a cost. So they both succeed and have an injury.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, you know, again, so Torchbearer, etc., has a specific way of making it feel that those conditions are relevant. You know, if you have a crunchy enough system, you know, you add a condition and then it really matters to the player. Personally, when I've been running, I have kind of a revised hit point system, but I've used it like once, and even then I shouldn't have used it. It's just more fun usually to get somebody in trouble with their parents or make them afraid of a flower than it is to just dock their hit points, unless you really have a crunchy mechanical system or combat or something that makes those hit points always relevant to your game, you know?
Well, I mean, in this case, because the game you're running is very, roleplay heavy, right? Like, we're super invested in the social lives of our characters. And so, like, the conditions that you hand out are sometimes mechanical. Like, you gave me mechanically afraid of that flower. but also sometimes it's just, you know, it's like the line between twist and condition in that game is kind of blurry, right? Because you could have given me the condition grounded when I failed that other roll, but like you didn't need to. Like the twist was that I got grounded, and like it was pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't actually need to write it down on the character sheet. Whereas in you know, so the amount of like mechanical conditions that your character needs are going to vary depending on how crunchy your game is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think again, this is my first campaign, and I think probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned is just to make failures rewarding. Which is, it's one thing to know it, it's another thing to put into practice, and that, like, you know, whatever the players do, whatever they roll, it should be fun and interesting somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I messed up in our first session by Oren's character climbed a tree, and she failed to climb a tree, and then I just docked her a hit point, and then nothing happened. It was not a fun, rewarding result of failing to climb a tree. You know, but I find that, like, you know, as long as I make it fun and interesting, players don't mind whether or not they get what they want very much, right? It's like, you guys are trying to do a meditation to restore some lost memories. You fail your role. Instead, a creepy voice talks to you in your head, right? And it's an interesting result, so you're not really feeling disappointed that you didn't uncover those memories. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I would like to interject that is perhaps a little controversial. But I have done it on occasion. One game I did it the entire session for everything, and I got some some feedback that was like, please never do that again. but I still maintain it was a great session. But you know, we've talked a lot about how GMs can help, you know, their players learn how to roll with failure. And that's great. But if the players are still rolling the dice, they know what a failure is, right? So my controversial thing is, game masters out there, roll the dice for them more often for things that would not be obvious. For example, if they are going to attack something, sure, let them roll the dice. There's no reason why they can't know how like well they did there. But if they're doing like, you know, an insight check, then why would you want them to know how well they performed in a dice roll? That is something, just take failure off the table. Make them question everything, right? You can just roll it yourself, and then you can describe what happens in and play with like the failure your own way, and then they won't have that like mechanical representation of failure in the first place. You know, it's like, okay, I know I failed, but, you know, something happened, that's great. Or, oh man, that happened, right? Which just kind of keeps it going a little faster.
You know, that was actually something that I was thinking about including in my campaign. And it's just one of the things that in you know, trying to get through things, they kind of fell to the wayside. But I think that really comes down to being on the same page of your players and what kind of mood your player has signed up for. Yeah. So like I built this campaign to you guys as kind of like a horror light. And, you know, Bet was upfront about like, hey, there's going to be will rolls in this game. You know, your characters are going to face temptations and going to have to make real roles and possibly fail those real roles. And there's going to be a certain element that's of a loss of control in this game. You know, so you guys knew that that was going to be one of the themes. And I think there's something inherently very kind of unnerving and suspenseful about not knowing if you succeeded or failed.
Yeah.
And I think that then that's why I wanted to include it in my campaign, frankly. Something where it's like, hey, you know, something is following you. You want to get them off your trail. You're going to make some efforts. You don't actually know how many successes you need to achieve this, right? Just like you went in real life. So you did your best. Maybe it's still following you. You know? Right? It's a very suspenseful thing to not know how well you did. And especially if you're getting information that's insight information. You know, you're just like, okay, is that information I can rely on? Not. And I think if your players have signed up for that and they know that, I think that's a great thing that really builds the atmosphere. I can imagine there's some players that, you know, and I'm this way sometimes too, who that really like control and really like the feeling of control during those games that might be kind of, again, unnerved and uncomfortable with something like that.
The question of hiding roles is very interesting. And I think that it's a lot of it comes down to which roles and how many. Yeah. Right? Like, at some level, rolling dice is fun.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think I would be a little disappointed if I came to a game and never rolled any dice. Because I like rolling dice. It's the same reason why I don't get a dice roller and just use, like, you know, on my phone or whatever. It's because I like holding the dice in my hand. It's, like, nice. It feels good. But I definitely agree that there are many situations in which it is more fun not to know, if for no other reason than it's really hard to avoid metagaming sometimes, even if I want to.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if I roll a spot check and I fail, it's like, okay, now I end up, even if I try really hard not to metagame, it's hard not to act more cautious when you do that. And, like, the alternative is to just, like, throw caution to the wind and be like, well, any caution that I would have here is because I know I failed a roll, so I'm just gonna, like, waltz in, you know, bold as brass and, like, let the trap hit me, right? So, like, I definitely agree that that is something that can add a lot to a game. I actually think its main drawback is that it's a kind of hard on the GM to be doing that constantly.
It is, yeah.
Like, That's I think its biggest difficulty is that it requires a lot of focus of the GM that sometimes you need elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean the ways that like I've made it work, use a dice roller, just cause, and then you need to have a reference sheet. Like go on to, you know, like Excel or something, and you need to make a reference sheet of like all the skills, and then at the top, you know, put columns for each of your players so you have a handy reference of those things. Because otherwise, you're just going to spend all your time asking them for their modifiers, or you know how many dice pool they have for that skill or things like that. And yeah, it requires a lot more prep and tools, so yeah.
And like definitely like run that past your players first. Like is my advice. Be like, okay guys, so in this game when I have you roll for a spot check, I'm actually going to roll that for you, and like that way they don't get surprised by it, like right when their character gets hit with a fireball trap and they're like, hey, wait a minute.
the game where I decided to just do it for all the roles, and this is like my first experiment with it. I'd never even tried like a let's mediate this by having me roll a couple. No, I was like, they showed up for the game and I was like, tonight I'm going to be rolling for your characters the entire time. And I was, yes, that's not the best way to go about this, but I was frustrated by they're not doing more role playing. And, you know, it's like somebody would like search something and then roll a failure, and then somebody else would be like, I'll just search it. I'm like, ah, no, don't, bad. So I took away all their rolls, and then that happened. And I mean, it was okay. And then I got the feedback, and then like, you know, we've learned to moderate from there. But, you know, I used it as like a very extreme dice punishment method to try to like make them role play better. And
sometimes you just gotta jump right into the deep end. Okay.
I mean,
here's a question: did they role play better?
They did. And actually, like, we spent less time like looking for dice, you know, because we were playing on a small table, and but you know, like Oren said, rolling dice is fun, and you know, when you roll well, you feel like you're like, I don't know, like fate has blessed you or something like that, right? And that just doesn't happen if you're not rolling your own dice, and takes it away.
And of course, this can also have a problem if you're in a game that has more of a tactical element, where there are more decisions that a player has to make based on their roles. So like, you know, rolling secretly can be very handy in more narrative games, or just in games where once the dice have been rolled, there aren't really any choices the player has to make. Like, I wouldn't want to do it in a game like Torchbearer, where like once the dice are rolled, you have to decide, okay, do I want to spend a point to reroll the sixes? Do I want to reroll all of my failures with this trait that I have that lets me do that, etc., etc., right? Mm-hmm. So this, like, you got to decide which game to do it in. But it's definitely an idea with potential. I would advise GMs to experiment with caution. Yes. That's what I would have to say on it. Since we only have a few more minutes, something that I did want to talk about briefly is how to institute a fail forward system in a game that doesn't have one, like by default.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, like, sometimes you don't need this. Like Chris, we talked about Chris's game where Chris has very occasionally actually given us mechanical conditions. It's almost always been twists, right?
Yeah.
And that's worked fine. But sometimes other games are not going to have that. You're going to want a more mechanical feel, especially in more dungeon crawly type games. So what I have found works pretty well is you can, like, as a consequence of failure, the character can get what they wanted but take some damage, because like the hit point economy is already built into the game, so you can trade on that. They can get what they want, but a piece of their gear can be damaged. Not destroyed. I almost never destroy gear in a D&D type game. But like damaged so it doesn't work for a while. Or you can like invent a couple of basic ones that's like, as long as you have the condition bruised, you get -2 on attack rolls or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've barely used them, but the Chronicles of Darkness condition system is a really cool system where basically when they fail a roll, you can give them a new condition and you can make that condition. They have some examples of conditions in the book that you can use, but you basically can give them, make it whatever penalty, or give them some, you know, -1 dice to this, you know, physical rolls if they're injured or whatever you want. And then have a sort of this is how you resolve the condition, where they have to make, like, they might have to role play a certain type of scene with a character, like, you know, the flower is now irrelevant, but you could have gotten over your fear of the flower by perhaps role playing a scene where you overcame your fear of the flower, or you know, something like that, so that, you know, they can have specific like, you know, conditions for resolving certain criteria, I should mm-hmm. say, for resolving the condition. Which is right. a really neat thing and very flexible, and the condition can be very mechanical or very soft and roleplay focused.
Mm-hmm. No, I knew that if I just waited it out, eventually the flower would turn into a tree monster and then I'd be okay. All right, well, we are at the end of our time for this. Those of you at home, if anything that we had to say piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythcreants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
Spend your next free evening trapped on a ship with a supernatural menace trying to recover your lost memories. And bring your friends! It's all in our standalone RPG, The Voyage, for sale on mythcreants.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythcreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.